Part 1, Chapter 7, The Folly of the Cross. We have explained to you how closely the sheer, endlessly varied range of human desires and activities is connected with the electromagnetic processes in and of the microcosm. The individual electromagnetic field of man is one with that of the Earth, so that in more than one sense he finds his center of gravity in this world. He is controlled by the Earth's magnetism. His whole life and strivings, his works and desires, are characterized by this dependence. He is of the earth, earthly. All ordinary, religious, occult, and humanist strivings originate and culminate in these natural law effects. They originate in nature, develop in and through it, and return to it. If you observe this world with its manifold activities, you will arrive at the undeniable conclusion that none of these activities, though often mutually opposed, are antagonistic to nature or oppose the fundamental electromagnetic straitjacket. Therefore, it is of no interest to the transfigurist which economic system is to become the life system of mankind now or in the future, which point of view man will take in any field of endeavor in this nature, or in which way man colors his mode of life with respect to factors of religion, occultism, or humanism. For the transfigurist is completely dedicated to a total liberation from this field of nature. One cannot imagine a more radical person than the transfigurist. The radical natural type strives for some change by force in the economic, social, or political arena, TE, a change on the horizontal level. The transfigurist, however, wishes to keep entirely away from this horizontal plane by means of a powerful, self-revolutionary intervention within his own being. Transfigurists are very scarce in this world. When we say this, you will perhaps point in amazement to the great development of our school, with its many pupils, but we must then point out that by far the majority of us cannot as yet be called transfigurists. To be interested in the developmental plan of the School of the Rosy Cross and orientate oneself completely as to what the school presents does not mean to realize fully this working plan in one's life. You will understand that there is a considerable difference, and this difference will be detectable for a long time yet, because people will later combat this transfiguristic school forcefully and recklessly, for which reason many a pupil may perhaps again withdraw from the school. People will say to you, transfigurism is a classic form of insanity which appears from time to time in the world's history. Transfigurism is extreme absurdity and scientifically impossible. The transfigurist tries to undertake something which is fundamentally impossible, or people will assert, the only thing one can reasonably hope for is to reach a certain high goal by one form of culture or another. And people will then refer you to various cultural acquisitions which appear completely to confirm this statement. If you do not stand firmly upon both your feet, then you will turn away from the school and, when asked, "Weren't you also a member?" you will blush with shame and, untruthfully, you will say, "Not me. Where did you get that idea?" Peter's denial is an ever-recurring occurrence with pupils in the forecourt. And yet transfigurists, with their signature of folly, are in very good company. Jesus stands before the Sanhedrin, the general synod of his time. They call him a dangerous fool, and Jesus is silent. Paul stands before Festus, the governor. He has given an exposition of transfigurism to the governor. Promptly comes the reaction on the part of the Roman, "You are raving." And Paul remains silent. Listen to Augustine fulminating against the Manichaeans. Hear how he puts them in the most ridiculous light. But the Manichaean brothers keep silent. How could they have said without a basis for mutual understanding? And have you read of what the Albigensians, Cathars, were accused of their extreme and dangerous folly, as it was called? Almost a whole nation was massacred, but the Albigensian brothers themselves, they were silent. Transfigurism must, of natural necessity, be an absurdity to all those belonging to this nature. The world oozes religious fervor, but the fundamental religion of liberation is considered an absurdity. This is the signature of dialectics. Think of the famous words of Paul in the first epistle to the Corinthians. For the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the cleverness of the clever I will thwart. Where is the wise man? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not the gnosis made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since, in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. For the foolishness of the gnosis is wiser than men. So we can conclude that the heresy of transfigurism is in very good company. Such a heretic is a fool, a nonsense talker, one gone astray. He is absorbed in the folly of the cross, and this foolishness only makes eminent and logical sense. This folly only becomes a majestic power for those able to understand and ready to carry the cross of transfiguration. The transfigurist therefore wastes not a single word on those who stand full of ambition in this nature. He will keep silence without uttering a word in his defense, without a word of compromise or concession. For this reason, ours is a closed school, and addresses are delivered solely to those of whom one can, for the time being, assume that they comprehend the reasonable basis of Gnostic foolishness to some degree. The world offers abundant evidence that it is unable to find God in the wisdom of God through its formidable worldly wisdom. We therefore dissociate ourselves from the world in order to immerse ourselves in another reality, free of all dialectic, philosophical working hypotheses. Is this other reality present in our nature? Can any trace of it be detected? Is it possible to test this other reality in a practical way so as to protect oneself from fresh delusion? Our answer to these questions is a resounding and sincere yes. Christ is the highest and most rational reality and not a historical figure. We allude to this reality as the radiation field of the Brotherhood and have told you that the center of this radiation field is to be found in the heart of this world. How should we understand this? The philosophy of the modern Rosicross states that the true divine earth, the world also referred to as the immovable kingdom, is not a planet which vanished into nothingness behind the veils of primeval eras, but which still exists in absolute perfection. This original planet consists of seven globes revolving within each other, and one of the globes may be alluded to as the dialectical aspect of this set of seven. This aspect, by reason of its dialectical natural laws, releases powers serving the other six aspects, serving the perfect life which finds its soul and divine expression in the septenary itself. Therefore, the eternal Father heart of the Logos urges and stimulates in every aspect of the divine, planetary totality, and consequently, the electromagnetic radiation field of the Brotherhood must be found here, even here, because this field is the fundamental heart of this planet. What we are accustomed to call our world is the highly remarkable, mysterious, and practically unknown seventh part of divine cosmic reality. And we, the inhabitants of this Vale of Tears, form part of a life wave whose original vocation was to attain glory in the field of the divine septenary, but which has now sunk into a field of existence in which no truly divine life is possible. We are exiles, structurally utterly denatured and reduced to a state of complete degeneration. Within us there is a fundamental quest for progress, for betterment, evoked by the ardent yearning of the exile within us for the blood and soil of his birth. And the whole world speeds forward like a hunted animal, and cries for culture. Do you understand what this driving means? It is an atavistic remnant, an influence from the mists of time and carried over from generation to generation. It makes itself felt, it appeals, but nobody knows the reality anymore. No one can know the reality, since the relevant faculty of perception has been lost. Dialectical mankind does, indeed, possess a perceptive faculty and a wisdom, but with this wisdom and this perceiving faculty, God in the wisdom of God can no longer be found. As a consequence of the fallen state of mankind and the ruination and terrible degeneracy of our field of life, violence is continuously done to this seventh part of the cosmic perfection. Nevertheless, one can and must say that God has assailed this world in its heart, since this field of life too is included in the universe of the septenary. This situation accounts for the presence of an electromagnetic radiation field of the Christ Hierophants. But by the same token, we confirm and experience that degenerate mankind lies imprisoned in the electromagnetic radiation field of an inimical and ungodly nature, is existentially one with it. Therefore, we do not ask ourselves, where does the magnetic attraction of the brotherhood come from, but where is the cause of this dialectical counter-nature to be found? Where do we find the nucleus of the forces of this general natural degeneration? To find the answer to these questions, we must go to school with the mysteries of the cosmic septenary, in which we request your attention. Perhaps you have grasped from the preceding paragraphs that our field of existence is but a small part of a globe which is not to be considered as an independent body, but as belonging to a system of seven bodies revolving within each other and together forming the real divine earth, the universal kingdom. Each division of this system is perfect in itself and has the organic capacity to fully protect itself against every assault on its aim and essence, so that the total functioning of the cosmic septenary is guaranteed under all circumstances. We stated that the cosmic heart of Christ beats in the core of our earth globe. It is clear that this is equally true of the six other globes of the system. We can therefore speak of the sevenfold heart of the cosmos, of which our sevenfold human heart ought to be the image. The wonderful organic faculty, the intelligence and the spiritual nucleus of the septenary world is enclosed within each of its globes, just as in the human microcosm, everything is enclosed within the auric being. Hardly anything is known to us of the globe in which we live. Our present field of existence extends over a relatively very small portion of our mysterious earth. The land beyond the veil, known as the reflection sphere, also completely belongs to our domain of life. It is in this field of existence with its two spheres that the rotation of the wheel of birth and death, so well known to us, takes place. Our field of existence is a prison, a cell, within the enormous system of the cosmic septenary. What we call the surface of the earth is a relatively thin layer, and our geologists and technicians are able to penetrate this thin layer only, and this but partially. Everything beneath this layer is largely unknown to mortal man. In general, it is supposed that the temperature increases, the deeper one descends into the earth, so that at a given moment one encounters a glowing liquid mass, and ultimately the infernal heat of a gaseous core. The transfigurist, however, knows that the earth's interior consists of fields of power and life, embracing one another and closely connected with each other, able to correct and neutralize each other so as to ensure the functioning of the whole. We draw attention to two of these fields in the depths of the earth. In these fields dwell what we might call natural forces and archetypes, by which the following is intended. A natural force is a faculty by means of which a plan is executed and maintained. The field of natural forces is extremely magnetic, or better still, It is a field in which an infinite number of magnetic tensions, vibrations, and conditions is evident, all of them at the service of the cosmic household. These natural forces are not, as is often assumed, blind with regards to what they affect in our field of existence, but are connected with the archetypes. In other words, every natural force is irrevocably bound to a plan, to a high intelligence, by which it is guided and in harmony with which it manifests itself. That is, the archetypes are the living, vibrating thought images of the Gnosis. They are called archetypes because the original divine idea takes shape in them. It is these living primeval principles, these living thought images of God, which evoke and apply the natural forces. When in the composite sevenfold earth body something threatens to develop which might disturb the harmony and frictionless functioning of the whole, the minutely attuned sensory faculty of the earth immediately perceives this, so that the archetypes and natural forces embodying the idea and the will of God will immediately intervene correctively. Imagine now that your presence in this field of existence, your life conduct, your structural state of being, your struggle for existence, in short, all your activities and those of your fellow men do not conform to the fundamental plan of God with the force field of the archetypes, and they do not. Then by virtue of their nature, the natural forces will violently turn on you. Then you experience these powers as discordant, then you are tossed to and fro in the dialectical world and cause one explosion after another. So it is not transfigurism which aims at a perfect reconciliation with the universal will, but the dialectical striving for culture which perpetuates the isolation from that will, which is absolute insanity. You are now caught in this electromagnetic field of natural forces resisting you, and in this field, an evil, a Satanism, has also developed. This evil, however, cannot be accounted for by natural forces, but is a phenomenon accompanying our chaotic, absurd life. Your imprisonment will persist until you find the way. Back home, to which return you are called by the electromagnetic field of the Brotherhood. In this endeavor, you are supported by the radiation power of the Christ Hierophants, and one day you will again experience the natural forces as beneficial and holy